Honorable Chairperson, sorry, I should have mentioned that that was one set of figures we could not lay a hand on yesterday before, you know, during working hours, we could not get obtained. So sorry for that one outstanding.
Can I propose that we start from the question with our question and then we move to the next one?
On our budget to schools in the past, you know, I was part of a budget in the Northern Shore, and you know, in terms of the provision of meals, quite clearly, I must say, in the first place, that the report indicates considerable improvement in the provision of meals. But there was a school that one came across that didn't have a proper place, kitchen or whatever, to prepare and serve these meals from. You know, it was a makeshift outbuilding on the ground that the people serving these meals were operating from. Now, quite clearly, in terms of the report, there's a whole lot of indication of improvements to resources and so on, but actually physical space for infrastructure. And one may want to ask, you know, to what extent, particularly in the rural provinces, are these infrastructure issues being dealt with. One was concerned to note, that in the Western Cape, that the Western Cape has been slow in providing warm meals. Was that what you said? And that that's been improved at the moment. The Western Cape does have the second lowest number of learners after Northern Cape to provide school nutrition, and it was a matter of concern to note that, it was only recently that there was improvement recorded in terms of provision of hot meals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the matter of nutrition, I'd just like to know, mention is made and conveniently one actually received requests in this regard and concerns from schools that the nutrition stops at a certain level, and I see at a certain grade. And I see that you might mention here of the expansion to secondary schools, which has been urged, I think, by many. But that has financial implications, of course. So what I'd like to know from you is, what is the planning in this regard? Which grade would you think one should eventually be able to extend and expand the program? And secondly, by when is the target to reach that particular grade that you have in mind in secondary?
Thank you. My question is related to that. I fully support the fact that we're expanding this to secondary schools as well. I think it's long overdue, the school nutrition. The other issue that I wanted to ask, though, is you mentioned the school nutrition program running over school days. Has the department at all considered running it over weekends? I know that doesn't fit in with the kind of time frames of the school, but I mean, a child's hunger doesn't stop on a weekend. And in many of these areas, the school nutrition program is, in fact, the only food that they receive. So have you considered that? Is that part of your future plans?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to know as to what criteria do we use in allocating resources for this nutrition program? Because if you look at two examples, for instance, Gauteng and Free State, you find that the amount allocated for free state for 2006-2007 was 64 million, and if you look at the number of learners that were going to be reached, it's 407, and the number of schools is 1,647. And if you look at counting, the amount allocated is much more, which is 99.9 million. But when you look at the number of schools and the number of learners that were reached, are much lesser than is the case with the state. And my other question is, for the Northwest, on the achievements that they have reached, we say they have received learner and teaching support material promoting good nutrition and healthy lifestyles for distribution to schools. I just want to know as what the situation is with other provinces, whether this has been done, why is it not happening in the other provinces. Thank you.
Thank you. And on page 9 of KwaZulu-Natal, I assume that those first two lines are possibly switched around, that the allocation was possibly 254-404, because I see there a mention of 80% spent of the allocation. If I'm correct, I still wanted to query that 80%, because it still seems quite a big underspend in view of the need in that area. And just how seriously is this taken? Is it a capacity issue? What is being done to ensure that the capacity is there? Then with the Eastern Cape, obviously the 62% is even more concerning. I know there was mention of some kind of seminar or conference, but that's not giving a sense of how serious this underspend is. And if we can just hear more about what the reasons are more in line with what assistance are they getting to ensure that that doesn't happen again. And then I perhaps didn't hear all of what was said around the agri assistance, and I'm just wondering, because a lot of schools that I would see are not linked into that, and how would we be able to help schools link into that? Thank you.
Why don't you call it that technical one? I think it says 9.
Uh-huh.
That 80 points is supposed to work.
6.8. Yeah. This is also the consult answer. Remember, they said more, not less. So also, to speak of
so the 80.
Okay. 106.8. That means that for technical questions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Many a time when you want to visit the schools, you realize that in certain schools, nutrition still has stopped because the service provider hasn't been paid for a number of months. Perhaps you could explain what causes that, but the person would not be paid and for a number of months. And also, prior to approving the application for nutrition, you first check as to whether the school has a safe and clean storage and a kitchen that meets the required health standards. There are some schools in the rural areas where you find they just pitch up a thin sort of shelter, but the ground is not cement, it's just loose sand. When the wind blows, the dust gets into food and the children just have to eat because they're hungry. And if children or learners are fed during school days because they come from poor families where there's no food, where do they get food during the weekends and during the school holidays? Because they remain poor even during those periods. And also one would want to find out what criteria it is to identify a poor learner to qualify for this. Thank you.
Then he's trying to ask them. Prof, actually, I don't want to ask a question. I'm making an appeal that, during visits to schools, one experiences is that some children actually do not participate simply because the meals that are provided, you know, are not appetizing, if I may put it that way. But you visit a school and you are told that a lot of children are not participating. And when you probe a little further, you find that the service provider really does not comply, you know, in terms of providing meals according to an approved menu. Now, my appeal is, as these provincial visits, officials will increase visits 4 times per month, is it per school? If it is per school, then it would be very helpful. But I find that some of them really do get away with murder, in terms of the fact that they are not providing quality service. And this compromises, you know, the good intentions of this department to provide this very important service. I don't want to ask a question. I'm merely saying that I'm making this appeal that there should be, you know, a mechanism that ensures that good meals are provided to these kids, because you are then told that the children resort to, you know, bringing their own little parcels from school instead of participating in the program. If you like, I will engage you privately. But otherwise, this is my experience, and if we are not careful, we are going to find a large number of people out there who are dissatisfied with a service that is being provided, merely because of the conduct of this particular service provider or provider. Thank you.
Can you agree there will be no murder arising after the response? Why don't I put my few comments in the packet? On page 6, the honorarium suggestion must go up. I know when we're moving around, we have 250. Is this centrally controlled? Who decides what? When you are saying maybe this will go up from what to what? On page 8, I see that this is to decide low and about, just about to be. But one would have thought those are the most hungry ones. Why is it that we cannot consider them last to bring up? On page 17, I see the Northwest is allocated for motor vehicles for monitoring. Is this part of this grant as the province is supposed to get out of this money to provide cars for this monitoring, or is it paid to the this? Let me make another observation now, which I don't know. Let me go to page 22. On page 22, that is what is the formula? What is surprising me is there, while we are already clamoring to go to high school, was there no more standard? How is it possible that one problem could be supplemented at 5 while everybody has gone to 7 and now one is not going to high school? My last one is the comment. I was at Limpopo on the 19th of March. I visited about 3 schools there. The principals of those schools, they said a norm in Zimbabwe, in March, learners do not get any. I don't know, I'm just saying this to your attention. That is reported in all the schools that I visited in March. I don't know whether it's translated from one financial year to one financial year, but they were reporting that for the March month,
no school is improper to receive anything. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure the team will cooperate. Let me just try some of the bigger questions, Chairperson, and I'll hand over to Regina and the CFO. Firstly, sorry, just to make the point, people, when I'm asked about the identification of poor learners, but just to make the point, of course, that we don't identify learners, we identify schools. So it's entire schools that are identified for inclusion, not individual learners within schools, and of course we have the mechanisms for identifying poor schools. Effectively, it's our quintile 1 and quintile 2 schools that participate, that shouldn't participate in the school feeding scheme. There are some schools that are outside of that frame, and I think that's why the presentation talks about a continual effort to refine the targeting criteria for this, but in the end, as I say, they are poor schools, not individual learners. The only distinction there, and perhaps we should mention it, two of the provinces have in fact, of their own accord and with their own funds, started in fact feeding secondary school learners. In this case, they have indeed gone for individual learners. I understand what they've done is they've asked the individual schools to identify poor learners within those schools, and they in fact run a feeding scheme for those poorer learners within those schools. That's something that obviously we'll watch quite closely. It might be one option instead of extending it entirely to secondary schools to go in a more targeted way like that, but until we have the resources to do that, obviously we can't do it. Perhaps that links to the question of the Eastern Cape. The norm, let me just make it clear, is that we feed for 156 school days per year. Now, clearly that's not even every school day. We have in the region of 200 school days a year, so even some school days are not dealt with, and perhaps I would hope it's not a standard in the POPA that there's no feeding in March, but in a way, obviously, for a certain number of school days each year, if that 156 days is applied, there are going to be instances where there isn't even no feeding. I suppose, Chair, the question related to that is about the weekends and holidays, and all I can say is much as we would like, of course, to continue and assist in that regard, logistically, of course, it's really not possible for us to do so. These are children who are at home, they're not at school in these times, we can't use schools easily as feeding areas, and I think in this regard we would need to rely on the Department of Social Development, who obviously have a scheme of food parcels for indigent families that they could benefit from. The child guards themselves are supposed to mitigate these circumstances as well. Ultimately, in those instances, weekends and holidays, we would have to expect that that would not be an education program, but somewhere else. Perhaps that also links with, Chair, your question about the ECD sites. These are community-based sites, so they're not government schools, as it were. The first criteria is that the Department of Social Development needs to register these sites. In terms of then the integrated plan on ECD, as soon as the site is registered, it qualifies for a subsidy from Social Development, and at that stage, ourselves as education are able to come in with things like the feeding scheme, with things like teaching and learning support materials, and the Department of Health kicks in with its various health programs as well. So that would be, I think, the limitation in terms of the ECD sites. And we have recently heard from Social Development that they intend to massively expedite now the registration of sites, even providing for things like provisional registration, just to ensure that these sites do come on stream and are part of the program. Chair, the Eastern Cape one, of course, is very difficult because, yes, our expectation is 156 school days, feeding from grade R to grade 7. Now, essentially, Eastern Cape came back to us and said, well, they simply cannot stretch the resources to manage those criteria. And really, they said to us, either we're going to feed for less days or we're going to feed less learners for that given number of days. And in the end, Chair, I think it was really just a catch-22 we're in. And we do believe at this stage that it is inappropriate to feed for less days than the 156. So at this stage, we have had to go with a compromise that says, okay, only feed up to grade 4, but obviously we are working with them for as far as possible to ensure that they're both expanded without losing the quality
of feeding that happens there. You can stretch these programs as far as you like. At the moment we spend, I think it's about R25, is our R50, is it? About our average per capita per day spend on the learner. Now, yeah, clearly you can trim that, you can feed more learners, but in the end, each learner then gets less as a result. And we've got to accept there's a critical level that you can't go below. It links also perhaps to the quality of food that you've raised, Champ. We do have a number of set menus that we provide to the provinces that we expect them to follow. But in the end, Chair, we're preparing food in a whole variety of very different circumstances. Some, of course, as some have asked about, that don't have the necessary infrastructure. You're absolutely right. Some of these meals are being cooked in the open over open fires. But, Chair, you have to then ask the question, do we then withhold the school nutrition program until we've got that kind of infrastructure in place? And say to these children, sorry, you don't have a proper kitchen, therefore you're not going to be part of the program. I don't think we can do that, Chair. So in the end, it's something we've got to continue working on while we continue to feed people and continue through the training to ensure that even though it's done in the outdoors, it's not necessarily unhygienic. It can be done properly in those sort of settings, but we certainly can't delay the feeding of them until those kind of things are in place. We have to keep working as best we can in the circumstances that we have to try and feed our learners. Chair, let me hand over now to Ms. Nujima firstly, and just see if there's any additional comments she wants to make before the CFO answers some of the financial issues.
Thank you very much, Steve, and the questions that were raised by the honorable members. I think the DG has by and large answered most of the questions that I could have responded to. But just to add, the honorable member asked why it is only Northwest that has received the LCS. And in actual fact, I think they are the only ones that actually highlighted this as an achievement. This has been sent to all of the provinces. I've brought some specimens for you to look at. We've tried to make them as interesting as they could be because they are actually targeted for the learners in primary school. So I'm going to distribute this. So they have been sent out to all of the provinces. The question of the delays in payments, we will always grapple with because of the long chain of command in the system and the administration of the program. Because if we don't have an efficient system whereby the suppliers themselves are actually bringing back the invoices in time, we always have these delays. But provinces are using quite innovative ways to try and shorten the time frame for the turnaround and the payments. We saw this one year there was an intervention that was implemented in the Eastern Cape whereby the turnaround time of the payments were expedited. So it is not impossible, but it's something that provinces have to work at. The DG has spoken to the issue of the quality of meals. I would like to actually reiterate myself that that is an issue of great concern for us because in spite of the fact that provinces actually have very good specifications as to what food should be provided to the schools, there is therefore a lack of follow-up and monitor within the province to the suppliers and therefore they do tend to make a quick profit at suppliers and shortchain the quality of the food, but that really needs a greater follow-up in terms of monitoring within the province itself. But we do really need to flag it, and one of the things we are doing in the framework document and in our bid is to request that we have a greater pool of monitors on the ground who will be at the national level initially so that we actually strengthen the monitoring, because as long as the monitoring is quite weak, some of the unscrupulous suppliers will actually continue to shortchange the system. I'm going to request the CFO perhaps to talk to the issue of how the funds are allocated and the issue of honoraria. I think I'm also going to ask the CFO to assist with that. I think it is quite regrettable that even though we put aside 7% for the administrative purposes, where some of this money should actually come from, the women that we're trying to empower on the ground, we've not really been able to do that. There have been various reasons for that, and therefore we are taking an undertaking within this year that we really are going to ensure that the women are not paid less than 500 rand. That is the criteria that we have put as a proviso for the poverty, because there is 7% that is put aside for that to happen. But what then needs to happen is that there also needs to be greater monitoring, because the suppliers sometimes are entrusted with actually giving this honoraria to the food handlers. So we will follow this much closer, but we also want to have a bigger audience with the Department of Labor, because in trying to empower these women, we need to actually streamline it in accordance with the appropriate labor laws of the country.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
The motor vehicles in Northwest.
Sorry, Honourable Chairperson, I want to pick up where Mrs. Ikijima left off. She's correct if she says that the conditions of the grant allowed for 7% of the grant to be spent on administration. Now, we must not think of administration as paper, but in terms of, in the first place, warm bodies that need to do the actual monitoring of what is happening and assist the schools, assist the provinces and so forth. And then, of course, those people do need transport. So, in a way, Northwest may have highlighted the fact that from some of the monies in the past year or this year, they're going to provide one, two, or three motor vehicles. It's actually necessary, even as part of the startup from a national level, we gave each province one motor vehicle to start with. Because if you want to monitor something and be hands-on, you can't be sitting somewhere in a provincial office and you just have a contract with a service provider, you don't know what's happening at your school. It's not possible to have a monitor at every school every day, yes, but at least the surprise visitors, they don't know where the monitor is going to turn up today, if it's at this school or school Z or wherever. It has an influence. So in terms of the general conditions of the ground, it is possible. Honourable Chairperson, I think to also perhaps just address a question around anomaly between Gauteng and Free State and numbers and so forth. It's not something that has a straightforward answer. If you have a service provider, you may say, I'm sending, instead of the minimum or the average of 1.50 or something per package per child a day, you may be spending 2 rand. But how do you know that your child is actually receiving food to the value of 2 rand? You don't have, because as soon as you have an external service provider, no company is in this for love and charity. They're only in it to make money. And they're going to take a percentage and they're going to go for maximum profit of that private enterprise. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's private enterprise. But the question is, what do the children actually receive? And so it depends a lot on how a province manages its funds. Does it actually provide just a sandwich to a service provider? Does it go and buy bulk supplies and you have the community preparing meals? Does it have food gardens? And maybe food gardens is the option that can, where you can say, I can provide not only for 156 days, but actually for 365 days. And more people may be eating. But now, across the country, all over, there may also not be space
or the climate or water or whatever for the rural garden. So it's a bit of a challenge to see how you manage it from province to province. I think the positive side is every month or every year we are taking steps in the right direction and we are improving the system across the country. Then I wanted to just have to also come back to the allocation of the funds. It was a bit of a challenge when we worked out the allocations for 2007-8. And I indicated to you that we've implemented and fully implemented the shift on the ground of demarcation. But perhaps you need to just look, take us yourself a step back and see when we inherited this program from the Department of Health. Certain schools were really being set. And in terms of our poverty index for schools, we found some of the schools being set were even quintile 3 schools. And then there were quintile 1 and 2 schools not being set. Now it is something that we inherited at that stage. And the challenge was, or rather, this was not a challenge, this was a problem. When the school is being set, we now stop feeding. The challenge was in order to say schools that should be fed, how do you also get them included? And as you are aware, we have these provincial quintiles of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, according to the poverty index of the province. Now that changed last year to a national poverty index and quintile schools across the country. In Eastern Cape, you, for example, found that you have 20% of Eastern Cape schools in quintile 1 and 20%, the next 20% in quintile 2. Now you'll find that about 50 or 60%, Mr. Patel sitting next to me would have the more exact figures, but 50 or 60%, now that we've moved to national quintiles, we find that in the Eastern Cape, 50 or 60% of the schools are suddenly all in quintile 1. You see that shift? Which means if Eastern Cape could feed, let us say, quintile 1 and 2, 40% of their schools, 2 years ago, it means with a new national quintile, they are not even feeding all their quintile 1 schools. Now again, the same challenge comes up. If they were feeding a school which, in their provincial definition, was in quintile 2, and in the new national definition, it falls into quintile 1, it's fine, they continue feeding. But if there was a school that was not being fed, and now it is allocated as quintile 1, they have to start feeding, but they can't stop another one that is being fed. So this is a bit of a challenge at this stage, and this is something that must be factored in from 2008-09, because we got the further step now. We've dealt with the demarcation. Now we've got to start adjusting between provinces based on poverty index. But it's going to pose, in an increasing way, the challenge that schools that are present being fed may then need to stop being fed. And that's going to create other havoc. So we need to still put our heads together and take advice on this. How do we start dealing with this from April 2008? It's a major challenge. There was one other aspect I wanted to raise, Honourable Chairperson. I just wanted to say that part of the problem with also payment of service providers, as it was raised, is that these contracted service providers are, of course, all provincial contracts. They're not national contracts. So very often we don't even know about these problems. If these problems are brought to our attention, we can assure you we communicate with the provinces, we try and assist, we try and find out why are the things not being paid. Sometimes there is a reason for not paying. But if it is only a question that they're not receiving the necessary attention, we do all that is possible to assist the service provider through the provinces on paying the debt because it's a provincial contract. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Two questions on infrastructure.
I had tried to deal with it to say that obviously this is a rollout and we've piloted in some instances what we would see as an ideal food preparation, food storage, food serving kind of area. And obviously we'd love all schools to move into that kind of position. But as I intimated, given that in some schools we haven't yet got even the bare maintenance, bare minimum for educational purposes, just classroom, toilets, etc., to think that we're going to be able to move into a position where we can confidently say each and every one of these schools has that entry infrastructure is not going to happen in the next couple of years. So my point was that notwithstanding the lack of infrastructure in certain circumstances, the school feeding program certainly has to continue, and our task really is to try and assist people to show that, as I say, even without that infrastructure, there's no prevention of from people from acting in hygienic ways, from storing food in particular ways, from preparing it in certain ways that can still make for a nutritious meal. So that would be my understanding of the infrastructure thing. I don't know.
We are working with the planning division of the staff of our department. One of the advice that we were given was that there are opportunities that are prevailing for us to actually put in a component of a bid before treasury closes in June. Of the other things that we think are actually pertinent in running the program, and one of the things that we have seen in some provinces, like in Gauteng, they have actually built structures that imitate kitchens, but which are very workable things that have been costed to amount. So we are using some of those practices to actually advance the speed. And also in going forward, one of the things we have not been able to do expeditiously is that we have not actually had a document, a guiding document on the school nutrition program. So the framework document will talk about at least some minimum standards that each province should actually have to have some undertaking to cook meals. Because we're trying to run away from the danger of food poisoning because it is there and it is real. So if they can at least adhere to a minimum standard that we're going to come up with, that would by and large actually assist us in that direction. But we will put in a bit to try and address the problem.
Thank you very much. We have two more documents, the life skills questionnaire and the learner. I could ask of
the
question. Yes, okay, fine, yeah. So I want to ask a question of life skills. Just to give you, I mean, it's okay, we are not having any cooked meals. We are back to pack. And again, I must say my concern if by saying that poor has dropped before, now they have to be at five. I would have thought funds before they come to say it's because they are main of them, therefore, they must not. To me, that doesn't sound sound. But then, can you go by still, too?
For packing.
Thank you, Chairperson. On this presentation, one of the key successes that has been mentioned is that 15,000 schools have set up care and support structures and programs for both teachers and learners. Who are suffering mainly on the, who are either affected or infected by the HIV/AIDS virus. I just want to find out from the department as to, you know, what role does the department do in ensuring that there is the environment in which these structures and programs operate is conducive for what we want to achieve. A chairperson, whether we like it or not, HIV and AIDS is being stigmatized. Much as we would like to encourage people to come out clearly. And from this presentation, it came out clearly that some of the elder students don't come out clearly, which shows that already there is a problem there. And some teachers find it difficult to discuss
discuss issues of sexuality with the students. So you can imagine now if those teachers have got to, you know, to come out clearly about their HIV status. So I just want to ask to whether are we doing it in such a way that it enables us to achieve what we want to achieve, or it alienates people even more. Thank you, Chair.
So the question is, can I take it? How many in my practice? Can not now. It is possible just to get them that this updated. Then say 10,000 learners. Where are they? And then how the city we have any problem including those schools? Not now.
Yes, Chair, we'll certainly get that data to you. I just need to check whether this is an annual development, which some are saying, although they're heading up to over the years, but I understand that this in fact, an annual target of 10,000 learners to be trained and peer educated. But we'll get you the information as to who they are and where they are. Chair, yeah, I think the Honourable Matamela has picked up, obviously, on a very central issue around any of these kind of programs. And you're right, in many ways, it's the social context that we're working in, an environment that in some areas is more supportive, in other areas is less. And I'm not sure that you can easily just say it's certainly not the rural-urban thing. I think it's, in all honesty, once the community starts recognizing the impact of HIV and AIDS, I think they become certainly less resistant to programs to respond to that. So I think there are many communities that are seeing the thing a lot more positively, but in the end, as you say, it's around teachers, it's around parents, as well as the children themselves. I think it's something you all need to work on. I think the one advantage, though, of the schools and care and support, it's very consciously phrased in a broader context. So it's not only care and support for HIV and AIDS people. It's a centre of community care and support for perhaps orphans, others who are poor, others who might be ill with different illnesses, diseases, etc. So really, it's more about perhaps transforming the nature of a society to become more of a caring and supporting society, using schools perhaps as a catalyst there. And I think people have found it a little bit easier sometimes to get involved in that, because it's not an HIV and AIDS thing. It's a general issue of, we all know there are people in our societies who are vulnerable. Let's see what we can do to assist them. And I think that tactic has been quite a good one. And I have to say that we launched last year in Mpumalanga really attracted enormous interest and support, and I think that's indicative that this is the right approach. But in the end, though, that's an ongoing problem we will always face. Every country has faced it. When you try and introduce sex education or call it anything else, it's always going to be something uncomfortable, and we must recognize that.
Can you
talk
about
this?
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. The theme of today's presentation to the Portfolio Committee is quite interesting, because we looked from dealing with the basic needs of learners in terms of food and health, and now we look at locomotion. So really the issues that are not directly education related, but play a very important role, and a basic and fundamental role. In my presentation, I will be looking at what are the issues in learner transport. And there's a number of these particular issues. What we have done is the Department of Education, in terms of trying to deal with what are these issues. I will reflect on what the current provisioning of status quo is, and also share with the committee what are some of the next steps that we're contemplating. Now, firstly, from both a policy point of view and a legislative and regulatory point of view, is that there is no clear and a direct national policy or legislation around learner funds. Now, when I describe the issues, it will become clearer as to why there is that lack of policy. Part of it has got to do with the whole issue of the type of infrastructure, apartheid infrastructure that we had inherited. And the issue was applying transport policies immediately would have meant that a considerable amount of our budget would have gone into dealing with transport issues because of the spatial, apartheid spatial geography. So the issue was around the location of schools. And clearly it was here at a lower level, specifically with provinces, to be able to deal with the issue of access, in terms of effective access. So in our policy, very broadly, there's two, and in our legislation, there's two key clauses that perhaps direct us in terms of the issue of transport. And number one is our compulsory education. And how we interpret the issue of compulsory education, if we make it incumbent on society that they must get their learners to schools between 7 and 15, we have to also perhaps look at whether they have the means to be able to get learners to school. So that's one area in which we could begin to expand on the policy. The second area is that the South African School Act talks about the responsibility of the MEC to provide learning places. Now, learning places is broad, and part of our interpretation has always been that it's the issue of providing access. So it's either the cheaper option is obviously to build a school where there is a sufficient and a critical net of learners, but failing which obviously is to be able to ensure that learners get to school. So it's related to the demographics of the country, the planning, and the option of whether it's a school building, whether transport needs to be provided, or whether a hostel needs to be provided. The issues began to emerge very, very early. In 1998, the Human Rights Commission did flag the issue. We then picked it up in 2003 in terms of the reasons, the financing, resources, and cost of education, and acknowledged that it was quite a complex particular issue. And the complexity, we have both a horizontal complexity and a vertical in terms of government. And that was flagged in the review on financing, resourcing, and cost of education. But the emerging voices of the work done by the Nelson Mandela Foundation in 2005, as well as the Ministerial Committee on Rural Education, began to highlight the issue. Now, it's because of the substantial differences between provinces, partly also because of the funding regime, the fiscal federalism that we have within our allocation of resources, that also the other complexity is the number of agencies involved. So we will have the Department of Transport, we will have the Provincial Department of Transport, and in legislation to ensure safe and accessible and frequent transport is amended by and large of the Department of Transport and the Provincial Department in terms of the Provincial Transport Planning Framework. There's also been, the issue really has also been that there's been a wide, so there are differences in provinces. So there are transport schemes that are particularly taking place within all these areas, but they're different. In terms of bus service, there are also, in some cases, contracted bus services have been provided, but the issue is that we've seen in the media, etc., the perceived quality of the service, and also the issue of land safety, where private transport is being utilized. Really dealing with agreements and payments of contractors. So in response, the Department of Education then commissioned a group of experts, and actually really experts in the transport industry. It's the NGO called Lamella, who had considerable experience in the issue of public transport. And they have looked into, and the objective that we are, of the study was putting together information on the existing transport schemes, both internationally, nationally, and subnationally, in other words, provincially. So, internationally, so the report, a report has been produced, and I will speak to the status of that particular report. But they, what they also had to do was to evaluate and develop alternative strategies to improve access to schools in South Africa and formulate a national framework on learner transport assistance scheme as guidelines for provincial education departments. So as I indicated, we have no direct education-based transport policy. However, the international literature has also shown that little attention has been given to the issue of transport. For example, in the United Kingdom, their Section 509 of the Education Act talks about some obligations and discretions around transport. It's quite a bit discretionary. And if it is provided, it should be provided free. And of course, the local authority could stipulate what the statutory age would be, and then there would be different norms in terms of the different age forms of children. Brazil has a targeted transport scheme only for rural schools. Indonesia is beginning to start something in the city of Jakarta. India, in some of the states, are beginning to look at it, and so too in Zambia. After there was 46 learners that died being transported in a bucket. Some work has also been done in South Africa in 1989 by the CSIR, who in a sense recommended that the authority should keep, should, education authority should be responsible for policy on transport. However, if we look at our legislature here, the Department of Transport takes responsibility in terms of ensuring the issue of public transport, and learners are specified as a special category, learners, disabled, the elderly, etc., and educated in terms of provincial transport strategies. So the complexity around we find that there is a complexity around the policy issues, not unlike the issue of school nutrition that we dealt with earlier, where it was with health, and then eventually we found that it perhaps that managed the education. Now, for example, in the Gauteng Provincial Land Transport Framework of 2003, a lot of these frameworks basically talk about regulating the service providers. They perhaps talk about the infrastructure. In other words, are they, in terms of traffic hazards, or as learners walk to school, pathways, etc. So most of the provincial land transport framework talk of regulation. Some of them do talk of provisioning. Now, what is the status quo? The National Household Sales Survey, which was undertaken by the Department of Transport in 2003, really says that 75% of learners take less than 30 minutes to walk from home to school. So that means really that is not a major issue if we say that it's not dealt with. However, what perhaps it would begin to deal with the issue, that means it's a 25% problem, depending on where we put our norm. Now, in some of the countries, they use a 30-minute walking time for learners that are 8 years and younger, and increase the time for learners of older age. an interesting phenomenon in developed countries is now emerging, is the issue with television and whatever else. There seems to be a move towards and the issue of climate change and the use of fossil fuels. There's a move now towards rather improving the infrastructure for walking and for the use of bicycles because of severity, obesity. So I think that's an area with my health colleagues, etc., that we will have to find a trade-off and a balance. However, as many as 5% of those walking, or more than 570,000 learners, take longer than 1 hour to reach their place of education. So really, we think that being a 25% problem of greater than 30 minutes, that if we even just target the 5%, and that we target the way through policy, or through guidelines, that we may be able to deal with the problem in a phase particular way. 25% of primary school children, that is about 1.7 million, and 36% of high school learners, that is 1.8 million, walk longer than 30 minutes, or 3 kilometers in one direction. The problem is particularly high in terms of the proportion of learners walking, and you know, we're not even talking about the effort of walking. If you can go to the or some of the hills of the Eastern Cape, the issue is that, you know, going uphill means that you have so many more mountains to climb. So a high proportion of learners walking longer than 30 minutes to reach site in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and North West. Now, in terms of learner transport policy and implementation, we have found that it is only 8 provinces, and I say only 8 provinces of the 9 that have given any attention to learner transport. KwaZulu-Natal is the one province that hasn't given any attention to it. So, in terms of whether provinces have formal learner policies, all provinces, the Free State doesn't have a formal policy, but they do provide. KwaZulu-Natal doesn't have a formal policy, neither do they provide. So in their score sheet, really, it is almost blank. But they are beginning to look at the particular issue, because the pressure is coming. I spoke about the diverse provincial practices, the type of transport issues that are provided, mostly contracts. But interestingly, we share the Eastern Cape, Northwest, and Mpumalanga have also gone for bicycles. That seems to be at least alleviating some of those particular problems. And perhaps we need to, as we begin to look at the guidelines and policy, it's an area that we need to give attention to. Now, the criteria for participation at the moment, most provinces generally use a distance of between greater than 3 and 5 kilometers. What we need to note is that our school funding policy already talks about the issue of greater than 1.5 hours walking distance, which is equivalent to 5 kilometers, means we have to provide hostel facilities for those that cannot afford to do so. So the important national legislation that we have to look at is the Transport Transition Act, the National Transport Transition Act 22 of 2000, where, as I indicated, learners, students, teachers, lecturers, in terms of their transport needs to and from education institutions, is regarded as public transport. And so this is a terrain in which we will have to do here. So at the moment, the survey and the work that has been undertaken, is being discussed within the fora of the education system. So heads of education departments are looking at it, and so are MECs. And we will then be proceeding along responding to this particular report, and then coming out with a position as to what is the area that we need to go to. It looks like more likely that we will have to perhaps
go through a very wide public consultation process around how we particularly deal with transport. In terms of the national level transport act of 22 of 2000, it requires provinces to include the needs of learners in the provincial land transport framework. And so perhaps that's one area that we may have to, as a policy point of view, I think the first question is to ask is do we leave it as it is with the Department of Transport? Is there a need for some participation by the Department of Education? If so, in what form? Because the entities for transport in provinces are obstructed with this particular issue. And we found that the interaction between provinces, provincial education department and transport, has basically been on the regulatory elements, you know, other bus companies, license, etc., rather than also dealing with the issue of access. Now, some of the problems are using distance as a criteria, but also income is sometimes factored in. In other words, you know, sometimes it can take you 30 minutes to get to school, but if you're driving at 120 kilometers per hour, you could be living 60 kilometers away, so you would be able to travel by car. So those are the particular issues that needs to be looked at. And whether in terms of a phasing, we need to look at the poorest, the rural, and the most difficult circumstances. Here, currently, the situation in terms of the status quo is in the Eastern Cape, 27,500 learners are transported, and they spend about 36 million rand. In the Free State, 3 million learners and 30 million rand. In Gauteng, 3,117. In Gauteng, 49,000 learners at 79 million rand. KwaZulu-Natal, as I indicated, 0. Limpopo, 3,000 learners at 21 million rand. And one can see that even the differentials in terms of the cost that provinces are spending. Mpumalanga spending 143 million and transporting 50,463. And I think they should be commended. I don't know, Mpumalanga seems to be having very favorable budgets in most areas. LTSM, learning allocation, transport, and I think the provincial legislature needs to be commended for taking some of these particular steps. The Northern Cape, 12,000 learners at 28 million. The Northwest, the information is not provided. They have, however, indicated that they don't have a formal policy. They do provide some financial assistance, for example, through contracts and through buses. In terms of the current processes, and this is the way I'm going to talk about the issues of the way forward. We're busy with the internal consultation within the education sector on an appropriate way forward in terms of dealing with the study that we've done. It's still a policy investigation and a review, so it will lead towards a particular outcome, and we will then have to go through a public process once we come to the internal process. Clearly, some of the questions that we will have to ask him and raise are, what is required in terms of policy? Is there national policy required? Is there some responsibility, or whether there should be national guidelines, whether we should leave it as a provincial prerogative, and if so, whose prerogative, Department of Transport or Education? So we have to establish some of the principles around the issue of transport, but also look at roles, responsibilities, and structure. Eligibility of who requires transport, when, you know, at what age. That means the identification of beneficiaries in terms of transport. And all the obvious issue is also, once you begin to provide free services, is to ensure that we have systems in place for the verification of beneficiaries. What are the modes of transport? I mean, not excluding bicycles, proper walkways, especially we in congested urban areas, where sometimes a simple bridge over a, or even in rural areas, a bridge over a river, would be able to deal with transport issues. The safety and health aspects, the service aspects, there are procurement issues, registration of operators, contracting, supervision and monitoring of the because we've got learners for their safety while they are in these buses. Cost is clearly going to be an issue. You know, codes of conduct of how learners behave themselves in buses, but also how bus drivers behave. And you know what penalties one has to begin to look into if one is contracting. So what is then also required is the scope of what is required. From whether it's broad policy guidelines to management systems and operations. For example, in the United States, the state government, state board of education, again, firstly, the first principle is that the state is not obligated to provide transport. And then they've got a however to both learners and educators, and then they've got a however in exceptional situations. This is what can be done. I mean, I think we're all aware with the American movies, we always see the yellow school bus with the engine outside. And then, states then require local education boards in terms of prescribing a color for the bus so it's easily identifiable. But also, for example, one of the reasons those buses are shaped that way is to ensure that the engine is outside the seating compartment so that the engine fumes, etc., don't affect the kids. So, those two simple issues that we see about the American school bus of why it's shaped in that particular way, but there are clear safety issues. Part of our process will be to out of the education consultation, begin to speak to the Department of Transport more vigorously, but also perhaps even look at a joint MNMEC technical committee that means that the officials responsible for transport at provincial, national level, as well as education, to be able to look at where we are in terms of the regulatory and policy processes, and to see to deal with some of the issues that are raised. Just to be able to indicate the scale of the issue and perhaps what are the indicative costs is obviously a key decision on whether natural distance or other norms should be set. Has implications that are not insignificant. In other words, they have very significant implications. They have implications for the number of transports and the expenditure identified. And if we just take a 3-kilometer norm for providing transport, we would have to transport something like 3.9 million learners. At a primary learner cost of 1.5 billion, and a secondary learner cost of 1.4 billion, that gives us a total of 2.9 billion. Now, we need to measure this against what the CFO was giving us the infrastructure table. We're spending about, just the infrastructure grant, about 2.1 billion. So clearly, this means it will wipe out our total infrastructure particular budget. Transport is more expensive than providing food. Definitely. It's much more expensive. So the issues we will have to accelerate on the infrastructure issues. And therefore, it's not only about transport, but a total demographic planning process, working with hospitals, working with transport allowance, different modes. The total that's currently being spent is 440 million. And as I indicated, the Mpumalanga and the Western Cape are the two provinces that have given quite considerable attention to that. And we're transporting 193 million learners. However, that doesn't mean that we go one full sweep in terms of the policy with the 3.9 million. We may have to look at that as a phased-in process. Thank you.
Understand.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think if one look at the position in the different provinces and how it differs in terms of the situation as it is at the moment, is unacceptable. And I think one could commend the department for at least starting to investigate this matter and to commit themselves towards coming up with some indication as to the road ahead. It is, however, concerning to see that, for instance, Northwest hasn't even worked together with the department to provide the department with the necessary information. I think that is also problematic. This is a very important issue, and I think something that we will have to, and the department will have to grapple with and come up with some kind of a solution as soon as possible. It is a critical matter, and I think, in a sense, it is the same kind of matter that the department took up and resolved the kind of matter as with regard to the whole school feeding issue. This is not something I think that one could just say is of lesser importance because it's not the key function of the department and so on and so on. Providing initially food to learners at school and also making sure that at least the learners can get to school in time and on a daily basis is of paramount importance. There can be no doubt about that. And, you know, the position in some of these provinces is that it's not for Mpumalanga and Western Cape to allocate these amounts of money to transport. It's not an easy matter because they must take this money away from other projects. And they are contemplating. I can tell you that the Western Cape is contemplating on a regular basis whether they should stop transport in the urban areas altogether. Now, the implications of something like that would be quite immense. And the reaction also from parents and so on, schools, will be very emotional. There's no doubt about that. So this is also a very emotional issue in that regard, and we shouldn't forget that. So I would really like to urge the department to talk to the Department of Transport then and to come up with some kind of a plan so that education, together with that department, or as in the case of the school feeding scheme, education on its own, but with the necessary funds also following, takes responsibility for this matter and makes sure that at least we don't have the inequalities that we clearly have at the moment between the different provinces as far as this matter is concerned. That is what I would like to say is to really urge the department to resolve this matter so that we can get a clear, even if needs be a national, I think maybe the best plan would indeed be to go to the national way and to have a national policy in this regard and a clear norms with regard to the way forward.
No other comments or questions. Other from Tim.
Thank you, Chair. Now, first of all, I'd like to thank the department for having undertaken this study into this important matter. Quite clearly from the presentation is the fact that the key challenge is the fact that as long as there is no clear indication as to what exactly is the national policy framework, there will always be a problem. And it is quite also clear that having a scholar transport being managed by another department brings the same problem like the school nutrition program which was given to health. And we have had some serious problems. So in my view, I think that if it is possible that some kind of negotiation should go into this matter, so that now we have got education, you know, as the lead department, which has got a responsibility constitutionally as well as in terms of education policy framework to develop norms and standards for education. It's a lead. Here we're talking about less scholar transport, and that is important in supporting and ensuring that now we are able to promote quality education, ensuring that those disadvantaged children are able to go to school. And it's also quite clear from your international observations that there are countries that are developed and are having a clear policy. We cannot go for British, you know, model to make it optional. In our case, it's not a question of it being an optional or discretionary to the province and the like. In my view, in terms of what is happening, is the fact that it is a matter of agency that to deal with the management of transport in the provinces, the diversity and being optional, then. The only way forward is to have a dedicated department as a lead, and that will come out very forcefully and very decisively with a clear national transport, a policy framework which will govern the management and all other various issues, so that now people are able to implement. As long as there is this ambiguity, I'm afraid we have a serious problem. Thank you.
I'm trying to get around that case and I have no transport. I'm finding it difficult to swallow this. Really, because I'm the first student in the whole stuff of the year. I know it is a paper, I've only talked to the president and the ambassador of all everyone. So much of that we got help to fund. I would really say the case that I never had that. Never there, zero. And the again, I've been assuming that there was a body, when you say flowing from that, the government must bring school. You say no school, you must bring. I would say in case that if you happen to be have no school around, it's your own business to find your way to the nearest school, however far that is. And I'm trying to get around it, I'm finding it difficult. I'm afraid, are you?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I can fully appreciate the complexities around this issue. I'm trying to grapple with it myself and put it in the context of the different schools that I've visited. I just want to understand a few things. The one problem that has been identified on the west coast of this province, in fact, is that a lot of fishing communities that have now don't have a livelihood have taken their kids out of school because they can't afford the transport of sending those kids to the school. Well, what can be done in that instance? Are parents being forced to pay for transport to get their children to school in situations like that? And are we saying that we can address this through a possible policy that we're going to formulate? I think that, I mean, I would agree we need national norms and standards and we need proper national guidelines as to what we are saying about school transport. But I also think that we need to look at the context of particular schools, because there is enormous diversity in terms of the context. And I think, for instance, in many places in the Eastern Cape I've visited, you're not even going to get a school bus in there because there's no roads as such. So we need to come up with very different solutions for situations like that, particularly rural areas, which I think is the area of greatest need. We need to find very out-of-the-box thinking as to how we're going to approach those issues, because those are the areas where children, in fact, walk the longest distances. So we need to think very creatively about how we're going to address issues like that. Thanks.
Let's take
a look at
the
Chair, let me just start in a couple, and I think, as you say, to a large extent, there were comments, but I think we appreciate the sentiment in there, and it seems as though we can rely on the support of this committee when we do come forward with a normative standards or apology of some sort on this one, and I think we all agree that that has to happen. And I just want to keep urging us to keep our minds open on this one. We very easily lock into, as Mr. Still says, the American school bus option. But the others that are raised in here, one of that option of just giving a subsidy to the learner, whereby the public transport is a much simpler, easier, etc. So that option must remain. And of course, the Department of Transport is committed to providing, I think, 1 million bicycles over the next couple of years. Again, this isn't a luxury thing. Bicycles in these contexts, a 30-minute walk suddenly becomes a 5-minute cycle ride. Yeah, and really, I think we need to encourage that as something. Chair, the one issue that also Mr. Patel has touched on that I think we need to just realise here is there is a big planning issue that is impacting on this, and that is, of course, the fact that in this country we allow people to choose the school they wish to go to. You talk about the American one, it's accepted. You go to the local school, and the most you'll get certainly is transport there. We allow people to attend whatever school they want, and I think you saw the difficulties in that produced in Gauteng. That Gauteng province was actually subsidizing a learner to move from where they were, drive right past the local school, and then get transported to another school somewhere else. Now, in the end, they backed down on that, and they said, no. Your obligation, we insist you get to the nearest school. If you want to go further, that's at your own cost kind of thing. So that sort of planning issue is also impacted on in this one a little bit, and I think it's an issue we need to deal with. But certainly, I think it has indicated using this report, following these consultations, I have no doubt we will be moving to a situation where we would want to see national policy norms and standards, but don't underestimate the 2 billion rand that's going to cost. Yeah? I don't know if it's still one.
On that norm issue, I don't end there. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm told that you are hungry, therefore there is an organized can I have 2 minutes, ma'am? I'm
talking
my MP3, I need to use a copy of this. Do I need a flashcard? No, I don't need a flashcard. If somebody needs to... I need to take a card.
The address for that day is yes. Now I didn't see the address. I came along to the UCA. That was good.
For this study, no, I don't have the address. That's why if you can get two sets, it's always better. They've got them lying there, you might as well take one.
Where can you get them from?
Right at the front there. Remember the lady that had the pile there on the front of the desk?
As you go in?
As you went into the meeting.
Yeah, I think the nurse is running along.
Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three, one, two, six, eight, two. Today's date, can I come back to the document? Today's date and the name of the book.
You found
all
the block. What do you do with it?
So what is happening with this document? They bring this document to me. So if they didn't get the electronic document, I have to ask those who are representing on the committee so that we can get the electronic document. If we can't get them total, we have to change it so that it can be available for in our website. And the name of the I need to put something on there.